with his brothers. And I've read this a lot over the years, and I find that every time I read the account of Joseph, I find it can be quite a tearjerker. I don't know if you find the older you get, you're more likely to cry at films and things like that. Do you find that? And you're like, oh yeah, I've just got an itch in my eye. But I'm like that when I'm reading some of the accounts in the Bible. And this is one of them, because it's incredibly moving. And you get a real sense of the depth of emotion that there is when that restoration of a relationship happens. And so we call that reconciliation. So when if I'm talking about reconciliation this morning, in this context, that word means a restoration of relationships. When a relationship has broken down and needs restoring, reconciliation. And the great thing about this story, about this account of Joseph and his brothers and his father, is that it offers us a lot of help in this area of restoring and reconciling relationships. But it also offers a lot of hope. Because the fact of the matter is, we live in a very fallen world. And we're fallen people. And by the grace of God, God helps us in all of that fallenness. But we all at some point have or will experience relationship bumps along the way where things don't go according to plan too well, and we find that we're having to pick up the pieces in our relationships with each other. And there's a few things in this morning that are really helpful for us when we're looking at relational breakdowns in particular. But let's have a look at a couple of different sides of the story that we're picking up. So starting off with Joseph, you could say he was quite a victim in all of this. He didn't really help himself. If you've not read the story, the background to Joseph, he was really spoiled. He was one of 12 brothers, but he was picked out as the favorite, which didn't go down too well with his brothers, but he really did not help himself. You know, he liked to remind them, and he made it quite clear that he was the special one. And that's the start of where it all went wrong, really. I'm one of four brothers. And anybody here just got brothers? Yeah. And I don't think it matters whether we've got brothers, sisters, or whatever. But certainly in my case, when I was growing up, because we were all boys, and I was one of four, if we had a disagreement, which happened a lot, we sorted it out very quickly. There was a fist that was flung in a certain direction and a great big scrap, and then we dealt with it, our parents dealt with it, so then we were like, oh yeah, that's dealt with, let's move on. Unfortunately, they didn't really, I'm not recommending that that's the way to do sibling relations, but it did work for us. Unfortunately, what happened with Joseph was something far more sinister, because this sort of hatred of him really built up, and they had this opportunity to just sell him into slavery. And I don't know any of you young people at the moment are quite tempted by that idea with your brothers or sisters, and you're thinking, how did he do that? Let's have a look in the Bible and see if we're actually allowed to do that. No, you're not allowed to do that. That's really bad. But they saw an opportunity to just sell him. And when you start to sort of think about that, and when you're reading it through and thinking what the impact of that is on Joseph, not the fact that he's just sent to a foreign land, but all the feelings of abandonment, of rejection, of pain. The brothers actually caused Joseph, no matter what his selfish character was like, and no matter what the circumstances were, I don't think we would disagree with each other and say, actually, Joseph did not deserve that. He did not deserve to just be sold as a nothing and go into slavery. And this caused him an incredible amount of pain and suffering. And so you could say, well, actually, he had every reason to be angry and to be bitter. When you look at the what happened to him, you could think, well, yeah, he's got genuine reason to feel angry and bitter. But what is clear when we read through the account is that at some point, Joseph has been able to forgive his brothers. We're not entirely sure what the exact moment was when that would have happened, but he had forgiven them. And in fact, if he hadn't forgiven, he wouldn't have been able to prosper in the plan that God had for him. It's interesting because when his brothers arrive, the reaction that Joseph has is very interesting. And at this point, he's not seen them for years and years. And I, when I read the Bible, I love to try and imagine what it's actually like. I really enjoy history, and I enjoy watching all the documentaries and things like that. And I try and put myself in that context. And I think for Joseph, he's suddenly found himself in this position of power. And I don't think that he took that lightly. I think the process of those years, God had prepared him to enable him to do that, to fulfill that task. So there he is, feeling the weight of responsibility, but able to carry it out because he knows that God has put him in that position. And he is managing the country. He is managing people's food and making sure that there is enough to go around. And so he's just going about his daily business. We've got no inkling that Joseph knew that one day he would bump into his brothers, apart from the fact that years before God had given him a dream where they would bow down to him. But I just wonder what was happening on the day when his brothers rocked up. Because I suspect that Joseph, when he was having his breakfast, didn't have an inkling that, oh yeah, I think my brothers are all going to turn up today. I think it would have been quite a shock. You know, I think he would have been going about his business and would have looked up and there they were. But I also think that there is a big element of God putting them in the right place at the right time. Because this famine was significant. It was significant enough that the countries around Egypt were needing to come into Egypt to ask for food. Now, they couldn't possibly have all queued up in a long line waiting to see just Joseph. He would have had people working under him. So the brothers needed to be at the right place at the right time in order for Joseph to bump into them. And it's a really interesting reaction that he has, because he doesn't initially let on that he knows them, and they certainly don't recognize him. They're not expecting to ever see him alive again. They really do not know what's happened to him. And so he has a little bit of an anonymity. Is that how you say that word? You know what I mean? Yep. I'm not going to say it again. But he knew that he had a bit of time where he was safe, that they would not know, that they wouldn't recognize him. But initially, his reaction is quite harsh. He asks them quite harsh questions. Why are you here? Are you spies in the land? But what it starts is a process of up to 2 years from that point to the point where this reconciliation and this restoration happens. So it isn't an immediate thing that happens. It's a process. But he starts to test them. And you could at first thought think, yeah, I bet with all that power, Joseph's got an opportunity to actually punish his brothers and actually take revenge on them. And if you're not careful, you could read that into to what's happening as he's testing them. And as the sort of story unfolds and he ends up keeping one of them back as you know, as a prisoner, you think, oh yeah, well, is that him taking revenge? Actually, it's not. It's all part of quite an important process. Because what Joseph needed to know was that he could actually trust them again before a reconciliation could take place. He really needed to know that they had changed. So on the first visit, that when they turned up, he was not in a place where he was ready to confront them. And actually, that's a very normal reaction, because when somebody has hurt us and there's been a breakdown in relationships, or we just feel that weight of pain, quite often, if we've not seen them and we see people for the first time, quite often we're not quite in a place where we want to confront and talk and show ourselves or show our true feelings or share our heart. So it's interesting to note that that is a normal reaction, and we can see that in how Joseph reacted. But when they came back again, we can see that some things have changed in Joseph. He's not so harsh towards them. And actually, he is in a position where when they turn up, he invites them in to his own home for a meal. And he is generous with what hospitality he lavishes on them. So that process in Joseph has allowed his heart to change, and for him to be able to be in a place where he can start to confront. But he also needs to know that his brothers have changed. When they served up the food, he made sure that Benjamin had been given 5 times more food than anybody else. And why did he do that? Well, one of the things that got Joseph into all the trouble in the first place was the favoritism that his father had showed them, had showed him. And the brother's reaction to the favoritism was what got him sold into slavery. So he was thinking, now, I wonder how much they've changed. So he puts this little test out, and he starts to show his brother Benjamin favoritism. And he's testing to see what the reaction is. And what he sees is that the brothers have changed. They're not they're not resentful of what Benjamin's got. In fact, they're actually in a position where they can just celebrate all together. And the next test that he performs is he puts this special cup into Benjamin's sack and just completely sets him up so that they can catch him out and accuse him of stealing it. And what he's looking for is to see how the brothers will react toward him. And it's what he's looking for is to see, you know, will they actually abandon him like they abandoned me? Will they be thinking about themselves and saving their own and saving their own skin? And it's really interesting to see that Joseph needs to go through this process of gaining trust again before he can fully give himself to his brothers. But let's have a think about what the brothers are from the brothers' perspective. You know, their sin was huge. You know, what they actually did was massive. And at this point, they had carried that for about 20 years. We don't know that their father ever found out before that. We don't know if he even suspected that the brothers might be guilty of it. But they'd had to keep this secret. And when we sin, and when we sin big style on some of these big things, sometimes when we're trying to keep them secret, that in itself can have big consequences for us and in how we live our lives. We can take on guilt because we are guilty, and that can eat away at us. We can live a life of anxiety, and just that feeling of unforgiveness can really have an effect on how we live. And so, to put it in that context, the brothers have been carrying the weight of this around for a very long time. And it's just interesting to think a little bit deeper about the brothers and what they've also gone through, because we're told all about Joseph, we're told all about the things that happened to him and that he got up to, but we're not told an awful lot about the brothers. But we can imagine a little bit about what that might have been like for some of them, carrying this weight of a terrible secret. And now they're being forced to return to the scene of the crime. And that must have run through their minds that, well, we knew that he was heading off in that direction. This is a little bit of an uncomfortable reminder of what we did. And their reaction and their journey through this process is also interesting. Let me read to you Genesis 42, verse 13. When they're questioned about who they are, they only tell part of the truth. Your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more. They don't really elaborate on that. They try and gloss over that pretty quickly, but they know the reason why one is no more. And then a few verses later, their conscience starts to be awakened and pricked. And while they're talking to each other, they say, surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this disaster has come upon us. So there's a start of something just happening that might have been deep down for a long time, but they're actually having to face and having to confront. Reuben's reaction is quite interesting as well, because he starts to try and play the blame game. He says, a few verses on, didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy, but you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They did not realize that Joseph could understand them, since he was using an interpreter. I love that. I just love the fact that they were completely in the dark of knowing who Joseph was, and that he actually understood all about them. And with my brothers, I can think of times where I've had a bit of one-upmanship on them, and there's a real smug feeling. But I don't think that that is where Joseph was coming from at that point. Judah, one of the other brothers, he also has quite an interesting reaction. But he was also the one who was very, very instrumental in selling Joseph in the first place. In fact, he took the lead. He said a few chapters earlier, he said to his brothers, while they're considering what to do with him, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. His brothers agreed. There was a lot of possible selfish reason there, because he's thinking, well, if we're going to get rid of him anyway, we might as well get some cash for him. But what we see for him is that his life really goes down the pan after that point. There's a bit of an account of where he really falls into sexual sin. And if you have a look a few chapters before, you can read all about that yourselves. But he has a period of time in his life where he lives a very immoral life. And he seems to sort of go from one thing to the next. And quite often, when we get ourselves into scenarios where we have done something that we know is wrong, and we're in a period of time where we're not really confronting it, we actually allow a door to open for ourselves to get into other things. And some of those things are perhaps attempts to cover up and to blot out the real root cause of that problem. But it can lead us further and further and further away from God. And we can see where that's happened with Judah. But he suddenly rises to take some more responsibility for things that are going on. Because in between the visits, when the dad has said, "Look, I don't want you to go. This, I don't want to lose any more of you. You're not going." Judah has this realization that the whole future of the survival of their family is in jeopardy unless they go back to Egypt to get more food. Because if they don't, they will starve and they will die out. And so he actually speaks up. And he also takes a personal responsibility for Benjamin. And he says, "Look, I will take responsibility. Whatever happened, if anything happens to him, you know, do what you want, but I'll take responsibility." And so we can see there's a change of heart over quite a long period of time, but there is a change of heart in his life. And actually, when it comes down to it, and when there is a threat that Benjamin is going to be left behind in Egypt and put in prison or worse, he pleads a very long speech to Joseph, pleading that he would let him go and take Judah himself. We can see that Judah has actually become quite repentant. Now, Judah's family line was the family line that Jesus would be born into. It's an interesting aside that Judah was willing to be a substitute for Benjamin. And that is what Jesus is for us. Jesus is our substitute. He took a punishment that we deserve so that we can stay and we can be in relationship with the Father, which is what Judah wanting and willing to do for his brother. And that's quite an important point to make because that is ultimately what was going to happen with Jesus in the family line of Judah. So just four very quick principles to pull out of this when it comes to restoring and reconciling relationships. First of all, reconciliation takes time. It took Joseph nearly 20 years from the point of the complete breakdown of his relationship to getting to that point where that relationship was restored. But what's really important is to recognize that forgiveness and reconciliation are two very different things. And sometimes if we're not careful, we can get the two muddled up or we can lump them both together. And that's not necessarily the case. And it isn't the case at all. Forgiveness is very different to a restored relationship. In Mark 11, it says this, "And when you pray, when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive them, so that your Father in heaven may forgive you your sins." We are actually commanded to forgive. It is something that must happen. If somebody has done something against us, we have to forgive them. It's not always easy, but if we live with unforgiveness in our lives, it's a very unhealthy thing because it eats away at us. It causes us to behave and to do things that are not healthy and that are not in line with what God wants us to do. And so forgiveness is really important. And it might be that somebody doesn't forgive us, but that's their responsibility. We must forgive because we're commanded to, and because actually, if we don't, it holds us back on so many things. But secondly, it's important to also note that the people don't have to be there that we're forgiving necessarily. So for Joseph, he didn't really know whether he'd ever see his brothers again, and yet he was able to forgive them and get that release in his own life because he had forgiven. Secondly, reconciliation requires truth. Joseph really needed to hear the truth from his brothers before he could have that relationship restored. Now, he went about testing them. Don't think that's a thing that we would encourage ourselves to do. You know, don't set up a whole load of tests and things. But it is important to note that finding out the truth is an important foundation. And in our relationships, you know, if they're not, if truth isn't a strong foundation in our relationships, then they're not very good foundations at all. And quite often, when we have a relationship breakdown, it's often because we haven't actually got all the facts. And a lot of relationship breakdowns, when they come to being restored and everything gets talked about, you sometimes go, oh yeah, well, I didn't realise that, or I didn't see that, or I didn't have the fuller picture. And actually, if I did, this relationship breakdown might not have happened in the first place. On the other hand, it's important that if some of the truths are not very comfortable, that they are out there, because if they're still not dealt with and they fester away, they cause problems. So we need to give truth and we need to hear truth. Thirdly, reconciliation takes two. You know, you can't force somebody else to be reconciled to you if they don't want to be. It takes two people journeying together to get to the same point where a restoration of a relationship can happen. Both parties are on a journey. I'm only on my journey. I'm only responsible for the bits that I can and need to do. Romans 12:17 says this: do not repay anybody evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Don't take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you'll heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You know, God will do what he will do, and we need to leave him to do that. But what he does say is, look, if it isn't at all possible that you can be reconciled, then you need to do everything that you can to make that happen. The good thing is that it is clear that reconciliation doesn't actually always happen. Whereas forgiveness does have to happen, whereas we have a responsibility to forgive, and we also have a responsibility to work at restoring relationships, it is also clear that they don't always get restored. And sometimes some relationships are not very healthy to be in anyway. So we have to be careful with that. As with the case of Joseph, we don't hear any mention of him being restored to Mr. and Mrs. Potiphar, who put him in prison. We don't have any account of his restoring of relationship with the baker, who forgot to tell Pharaoh about the interpretation of the dream for a couple of years and left him in prison for even longer. But what we know is that he will have forgiven them, but actually, you know, some of those relationships might not have been terribly healthy anyway for him to pursue. And actually, sometimes, you know, when we've been sinned against in certain scenarios by certain people, it's not always going to be helpful for us to be back in a really close relationship with them anyway. And lastly, reconciliation takes trust, and ultimately in God. Throughout the whole account of Joseph, we're constantly reminded, and God was with Joseph, and God was with Joseph. God is with us, and God is for us. And when we put our trust in him for everything, then it really helps us in the context of relationships and even in repairing relationships. Romans 8 says, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." Joseph recognized that God was with him, and Joseph recognized that God had a plan and a purpose, and that the dreams he had were God's dreams. Initially, he had a very sort of selfish outlook on the dreams, and he couldn't wait to tell his brothers that they would one day bow down to him. But when it actually came down to it, where the brothers did bow down to him, he didn't revel in the glory of his brothers doing that. He just saw God's ultimate plan and purpose. And he's very clear with his brothers when they are scared for their lives, scared of the consequences, that now Joseph is here, he's all powerful, he could have anything done to them, he could take revenge on them in any way that he wanted. They were scared for their lives. But Joseph is in a place where, because he's forgiven, and because that's that part of his life is dealt with, where he's able to say, actually, God needed this to happen. God, God isn't into planning for us to have bad relationships and things, but he will use some of the bad stuff that happens to us in life to bring good out of it. And Joseph is able to say, look, it's really important that I got to Egypt and that I rose into this position, because of me, God has been able to save thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people. But more importantly, he has been able to save our family. And Joseph could see and had a sense of the bigger picture. He knew, because of the heritage of his family and what God had spoken over his family, that his family was significant in the plans and the purposes of God. And so their survival was essential. It was important because of that, because of the bigger picture, because that family would rise to become a nation, and that through that nation, Jesus would be born into, and because of that, the whole world would be saved. It was important that Joseph and his brothers went through all those processes of forgiving and working their way through to restoration. God needed a repentant, heart-changed family to become the fathers of the nation of Israel. This series that we're doing at the moment, and I really love this account of Joseph, because there is so much in it. And, we've pulled out so many different bits over the last few weeks, and there's so much that we can learn. But we've been focusing in on the fact that God has a dream for us to live. It's God's dream that we're in. And he has a plan and he has a purpose for us that's a lot bigger than ourselves. But what he needs of us is a people whose heart is willing to be changed, willing to forgive and willing to be forgiven and willing to be reconciled. And I just for a moment or two, if we can just close our eyes and just reflect a bit, I just want to challenge us this morning. Is God just reminding you or prompting you or challenging you that actually you have a little bit of unforgiveness in your lives at the moment, that there are people that you need to forgive? And at this moment in time, the process might be that I just need to forgive them. I just need to deal with that in my heart. I need to let go and I need to decide that I'm going to forgive. And actually, that's a decision that you make. The bit in your heart, the feelings bit, often comes later. Because you might be going, well, I don't feel like I've forgiven them. Because I still feel this and this and this. But I can promise you that if you keep deciding, I will forgive. And if you keep telling God that you have forgiven them, those feelings will come somewhere down the line. But the important thing is that you say, Lord, I forgive whoever. It might also be that God's just prompting you this morning that you need to start a process of reconciliation with somebody relationally, that you need to start putting and restoring a relationship. And you can take encouragement from the fact that it doesn't have to happen just like that. It can be a process. It's a process that you work at with God. And thirdly, you might have never been in relationship with Jesus, or you might have walked away from a relationship with Jesus. And actually, this morning, you need to be reconciled and restored in your relationship with him. And you need to do something about that this morning. I'm just going to give us a moment or two just to reflect on that before we finish. Father, I just want to thank you that you have a plan for our lives and that you have a bigger picture for our lives than even we can see. And I just pray, Lord God, that you would help us in this area of relationships, and especially when things don't always go as well as they should. I pray, Lord, that for those of us who are saying to you that we are in a place where we're deciding to forgive, that you would help us to keep forgiving. For those that are you are challenging just to start to repair some relationships with somebody, that you would be in that process, and that you would reveal more of your bigger plan through that. And I just pray, Lord God, for anybody here this morning who's realizing they need to step into or back into relationship with you this morning, that you would give them the boldness to do that.